Deva Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 14, Text 23. I'll just chant it. Atacha tasmad ubayatapihi karmasmin atmana samsara vapanam udaharanti. Translation. I would do the word for it. Ata, now. Cha, and. Tasmat, because of this. Ubayata api, both in this life and in the next. He, undoubtedly. Karma, fruit of activities. Asmin, on this path of sense enjoyment. Atmanaha, of the living entity. Samsara, of material life. Avapanam, the cultivation ground or source. Udaharanti, the authorities of the Vedas say. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Learned scholars and transcendentalists therefore condemn the materialistic path of fruit of activity because it is the original source and breeding ground of material miseries, both in this life and in the next. Not knowing the value of life, karmis create situations whereby they suffer in this life and the next. Unfortunately, karmis are very attached to material sense gratification, and they cannot appreciate the miserable condition of material life, neither in this life nor in the next. Therefore, the Vedas enjoin that one should awaken to spiritual consciousness and utilize all his activities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord Himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 9, Text 27, Yat karoshi yat asnasi, yat jahosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi kunteya, tat karushva madarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. The results of all one's activities should be utilized not for sense gratification, but for the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord gives all information in Bhagavad Gita about the aim of life, and at the end of Bhagavad Gita, He demands surrender unto Him. People do not generally like this demand, but one who cultivates spiritual knowledge for many births eventually surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam papajjate. Om agina timanam dasha jananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gadave namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nunam pramate kurute vikarma, yat indriya prithaya aprinoti, yat sadhu manye yato atmanoyam, sanapi kleshada ashadeha. That's Lord Rishabhdev. He's instructing his 100 sons back there in the 5th chapter. And basically, he's explaining that people are mad after sense gratification. And because they're mad after sense gratification, they do things which are really crazy. They're crazy because engaging in fruitive activities, why it's called mad, is because the result of engaging in these fruitive activities, in other words, endeavoring for sense gratification, is suffering in this life and in the next. So it's actually, if you stop and think about it, it's a kind of insanity. You know, the conditioned souls in this material world are behaving insanely. They're behaving in a way that's bringing about suffering for themselves in this life and in the next life. You know, don't forget, back in those days, people believed in the next life, and they understood the consequences of, you know, what you do now in the next life. So even knowing this, people still are endeavoring for sense gratification. So how is that possible? I mean, how is that possible that people are behaving like that? Well, that's explained in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, Arjuna asked that question. Atak kena prayuktoyam yogam charati purusha anichanap vivarshneya baladevid niyojita. By what are people forced to act sinfully, even unwillingly, as if impelled by force, like that? And Krishna answers in several verses. And in one verse, he says, avritam gyanam etena kamarupena kunte. Avritam gyanam etena. What did I say? Avritam gyanam etena. Gyanino nichavarina. Kamarupena kunteya duspadein analenacha. That the living entities, the wise living entities, pure knowledge is covered by lust, which is never satisfied and burns like fire. So that's the point. It's covered. Our knowledge is covered. Our real intelligence is covered. And as a result, we can act in this crazy way, you know, doing something which it's basically self-defeating. You know, we're engaging in activities which are going to cause us suffering in this life and in the next life. So Prabhupada specifically in this purport, he talks about... it's an overall general criticism of the materialistic path of fruitive activity. It's being condemned. Learned scholars and transcendentalists condemn the materialistic path of fruitive activity because it is the original source of breeding ground of material miseries, both in this life and the next. And Prabhupada in his purport, he quotes that verse, Yat Karoshi Yadas Nasha Yat Jahosi Dadasi Yat, how we should, everything we should do should be an offering to Krishna. And the basic idea of the whole thing is that this human form of life is actually very, very rare. And, you know, it's achieved after transmigrating through so many different species of life. I think in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's 10:10 or 10:11, Prabhupada says, we've had many, many millions of births. Many, many millions of births in the material world. So finally we get a human body, and we should use it to try to become free from the cycle of birth and death, to try to become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to Godhead. And not be cheated, you know, not miss out on this incredible opportunity. Right? It's Prabhupada says here an interesting sentence right at the end of today's purport. He says, people do not generally like this demand, referring to Krishna's demand to surrender, or abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto him. He says, but one who cultivates spiritual knowledge for many births, okay, so first let's talk about cultivating spiritual knowledge for many births, eventually surrenders unto the lotus feet of Krishna. So in other words, it's no easy thing. You know, you've got people, Papa's talking, you're cultivating spiritual knowledge for many births, and then you eventually surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this we can understand. We really got ourselves in a big mess here. And what's the evidence of that? Look how difficult it is to get out of this. You know, it's so difficult to get out of this material world and go back to Godhead. And you have to cultivate spiritual knowledge for many births, and then eventually, you know, you can surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, so once again, we should be conscious of what a rare and incredible opportunity we have now and really try to take advantage of it and not take it for granted. One analogy that came to my mind is, you know, when you're a kid, your parents are, you know, trying to feed you, and kids generally, they don't like to eat the vegetables, you know, the spinach and the asparagus and all the healthy stuff. But so they'll try to leave that on the plate there and, you know, just eat the desserts. But and then your mother or your father will say, you know, there's children in other parts of the world. They don't have anything to eat. You know, eat all your food, you know. You can't leave that like this. So in this way, and don't take it for granted. Be grateful that you have vegetables to eat. Don't forget, there's kids in other parts of the world that don't even have them like that. So in the same way, we should be grateful that we have a human body and that we've, you know, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, come in contact with this Krishna conscious movement. And we should be grateful to engage in devotional service, any service. You know, we shouldn't be like the kids who don't want to eat the vegetables and just want to eat the dessert. We should be, our mood should be, you know, we can have a preference, but our mood should be whatever. You know, whatever needs to be done, let me do it. You know, Prabhupada used to say, do the needful. You know, so we shouldn't become like ingrates like that. Just whatever's, any service, I'm willing to do, and ready, willing, and able to do any service that's required. You know? And we're willing to do that with great enthusiasm. I mean, there's a way in which activities are supposed to be conducted. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about action in the mode of ignorance, action in the mode of passion, and action in the mode of goodness. So I'm just going to mention about, just give the description of action in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada says is action without wavering in success or failure. These are some of the things from the purport, Prabhupada, of that verse. Always enthusiastic till the completion of such work. Does not care for success or failure, equal in both happiness and distress. So that's from the translation and the purport. So that's how we have to be conducting our activities, our devotional service, you know, with great enthusiasm till the completion of such work. And for us, really, if you stop and think of it, that means till our dying breath, until your last conscious moment, because, you know, we have that instruction, always remember Krishna, never forget him. And in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained, yam yam vapi smanam bhavam tyajate ante kalevanam. I'm quoting the wrong verse, but, you know, whoever remembers me right at the moment of death, you know, without fully remembers me, that person attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. In other words, our service doesn't end until that very last second, that very last moment. So Prabhupada's saying here, enthusiastic till the completion of such work, that means till the moment you, the last moment, the last breath, the last thought, that's the completion of the work. So we have to be like that, without wavering in success or failure, without trying to be equal in both happiness and distress, so we can successfully go back home, back to Godhead. And so that's determination, or that's action in the mode of goodness. Yeah, and it's of course that's going to be a challenge, but by understanding our situation through the knowledge we get from the Shastra, we can do it. One of the challenges that we might face to execute this instruction of acting, you know, in the mode of goodness, not being attached to success or failure or happiness and distress, is. Well, there's many. Prabhupada describes in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that chapter, Devotional Service, he talks about how the nature of the materialistic person, and he describes a whole bunch of different things that are, you know, common of a materialistic person. And one of them, he says, generally a materialistic person becomes dejected when he cannot execute something successfully. Okay? So in other words, due to our conditioning, it might not be completely... you know, easy to always to do like this, to be not wavering in success or failure and happiness and distress, because the tendency is, if to the degree that we're still being influenced by our material conditioning, to that degree we'll experience that. We'll be dejected when we cannot execute something successfully. You see? But we have to understand that's what's going on, that's just the mind, you know, and we shouldn't really pay much attention to it. Like, actually, it's easy to understand. Most devotees, we very readily and easily understand how the gross material body is a machine, you know, but also the mind is a machine. It's subtle, but it's a machine. It functions in a particular way and it's predictable. Okay? So when we understand that, we can, you know, when the mind performs its shenanigans, you know, when it does its things like becoming dejected, when we're not successful in some attempt, or becoming envious when somebody's successful at something and we're not, and, you know, when it's doing these different things, and the list goes on and on and on and on, we should just understand that, hey, that's the mind, and I don't have to go along with that program. I don't have to buy into it. You see? You know, my mind's feeling like that, but you have your intelligence, too. And with your intelligence, we have to understand that, okay, that's just my mind. Let me just go on and continue anyway. You know, perform the service. Okay? You just, you know, make that adjustment. I remember this is like a mundane analogy to kind of illustrate this point of how we have to manage this type of thing. Back when back around 1994, 95, I moved back to the United States from Australia and New Zealand, and I bought a van, a Plymouth Voyager. So after a short time, I started having problems with the, I didn't know what it was at first, but apparently found that it was the transmission. I would be driving, and I go to accelerate, and sometimes I hear like a vroom. What the heck is that? You know, and then I lose power. So I didn't know what it was, so I just pushed down the accelerator a bit more. Actually, what was going on was it was slipping. The gears were slipping. I was, you know, kind of, the teeth were getting, it wasn't engaging. So I didn't know what it was or what to do, so I did exactly the wrong thing. I pushed on the accelerator more, which just, you know, aggravates the problem. It makes it worse. And gradually what happened is the transmission on that thing just went completely. And I wound up selling the thing to Dale's, which is like one step up from Pick Your Part. And so, you know, lost the whole vehicle because I, you know, to replace the thing would have been more expensive than what the car was worth. Then I guess I learned a little something. So then I had another car after that. And same thing started happening. So this time I knew, okay, it's transmission. I took it to a place, and I got the transmission done. Very expensive, almost more, you know, once again, almost equal to what the value of the car was. But at least I didn't lose the car. Now I have a car, same thing's happening again. See, but now I know what's going on. Every time it hits a certain, you know, 45 miles per hour, the thing starts to slip a little bit. So all I do is I just take my foot off the accelerator and just then gently put it down again, and just then it goes right in there. You see, so it's a machine. I've learned from experience how to deal with that machine, so I don't have to, I'm not going to, you know, lose the whole thing. I don't have to do an expensive repair on it. I just know how it works. I just, you know, don't, rather than just kind of dram down on the accelerator for more power, I just lift up a little bit and, so I don't know what's going on even, but I know that what I'm doing, it works all the time. I just press down again. So in the same way, we just have to, the analogy is that the mind's a machine. And when we understand, we can understand by reading Prabhupada's books, by reading the Bhagavad Gita, and we get so much information about what's going on, how the mind works. And that should be, we have to make use of that. You know, so with our intelligence, we have to know, okay, this is sex desire. Well, okay, so what? It's not like I have to follow the dictation of the mind. You know, Prabhupada says it's actually right here in this volume. I think we just read it recently. It says one of the main weapons we have in dealing with the mind is neglect. See, when we know what's going on, you know, we know, oh, that's the mind. That's my conditioned materialistic mind, you know, like doing like this, being lusty, greedy, angry. And we just, with our intelligence, we know, okay, well, I don't have to do that. I don't have to follow that program. I don't have to buy into that. And we just continue on with our devotional service. And if we do like that, Krishna is very pleased. you know, and very, very pleased. I've experienced a lot on Sankirtan, how you just have to, you know, neglect your mind. You know, the mind is, particularly this point here, like I chose this one because I could really relate to that, how the materialistic person becomes dejected when he cannot execute something successfully. So, you know, so often on Sankirtan, you know, might be trying for some period of time, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and, you know, it's really, nothing's happening. And you get dejected. It's hard. It's, you know, it's hard to kind of maintain your enthusiasm and you know, just stay determined like that. But if I'm able to remember this, that, okay, just stay enthusiastic. It's just, you know, just your mind is becoming dejected now because, you know, you're not getting any result like that. Just stay enthusiastic. And if I'm able to, fortunate enough to remember that and continue, then Krishna sees that and he reciprocates. You know, in the 18th chapter, it's explained that there's five factors of action. And the most important of those is the super soul. And Prabhupada says in there's a few verses where that's talked about, the five factors of action. And Prabhupada says here, but all one's activities depend on the will of the super soul. The Supreme Lord is the supreme cause. Everything is dependent on the supreme will. The final cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like that. So we always remember that. Krishna is the ultimate determining factor. That, you know, if we just have this determination that we're going to try to act according to intelligence rather than act according to the dictations of the mind, act according to what, and our intelligence means the instructions we've received from our spiritual master. You know, the instructions that we're getting from Prabhupada throughout his purports and lectures and everything. You know, we just try to act according to that with enthusiasm and with determination, and ultimately everything will work out, you know, very wonderfully, very gloriously. Why? Because Krishna is within our heart, and Prabhupada says right there in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, he's aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. You know, he's aware of everything. You know, and he's just watching, and he's just waiting, and he responds, he reciprocates with the devotees. So when he sees that we're trying to use our intelligence and follow the instruction of the spiritual master and neglect and ignore the dictations of the materialistic mind, then he will reciprocate in so many different ways. He'll reciprocate by giving you a good result in your service. He reciprocates by enable you, your personality will transform, and you'll start, you know, developing the qualities that you want to develop and get rid of the qualities you want to get rid of, like that, in every different which way. And and just like this can happen, certainly happens on an individual level. You know, each one of us will experience that if we do like that. And it also happens on a collective level. In other words, if it's as a community, as a temple, you know, if we have certain goals that we want to achieve, and we try to work cooperatively, you know, to achieve those goals. Like this year, we want to make a lot of devotees. So if we all are, you know, working cooperatively, Krishna's watching that too. Krishna's watching to see, okay, you know, are they using their intelligence? Are they, you know, are they trying to act on the platform of intelligence? And if we are, then Krishna's pleased by that, and he reciprocates with the entire community. See? I'll give you an example. Oh, this is an example of one aspect of cooperating is that was appreciated by a new guest that we just had recently. We met this boy when we went to Cal State Northridge. Very interesting situation. We were, myself, Jagaranga, and Tulsi Shaki Mataji were distributing books at Cal State Northridge. And one of us gave a Perfection of Yoga to, gave it to this other fellow who was in a bookstore looking for a Bhagavad Gita. But he didn't really want to buy it there because he felt he had to get a Bhagavad Gita for a course. But he thought, it should come to me in some special way. I just don't want to go to the college bookstore and buy it. That was his sentiment. Anyway, he was in the bookstore just to see what was going on, but he was thinking like that, he told us. So anyway, somebody came up to him and said, hey, you're into this kind of stuff here, and he gave him a Perfection of Yoga. So he started checking it out, and he immediately found it interesting. Okay. So then he said, well, and the person told him, these people are on campus. You know, you could maybe go find him and, you know, get the Bhagavad Gita from them. So he went looking for us. When he got there to where we were just in the process of being, getting investigated by the police. They had just stopped Jai Gauranga, you know, and they were the policeman had his car there, you know, the whole intimidating thing. The police car didn't have the sirens going, but the police car pulled in, and he had Jai Gauranga like stand there, you know, he wouldn't allow him put his hands in his pockets or anything like that. And anyway, it was a whole thing, you know. And at one point, he actually had him sit down in front of the police car with his legs crossed, you know, while he was running a check on his driver's license and stuff like that. Meantime, this fellow was there. And, you know, rather than just get, okay, whoa, wait a second. I don't want to get involved with these people. Rather than just feel like that and walk away, he sat there. I was watching him because I was there too. And he was just sitting there reading The Perfection of Yoga, you know, the whole time. And then he checked me out and he checked Mataji out, you know, and he was just there the whole time. And then he said, okay, you're free to go now. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to talk to this guy because, you know, the cop just finished explaining to us that, okay, you can't be on campus for 7 days. If you are, you'll be considered trespassing and we'll arrest you. And then after that, you can apply for a permit. And if you get one, then you can do your activity here. So I thought that's 7 days starting from, you know, right now. So I don't want to mess around, you know, police. You know, you don't want to mess around. So I figured, okay, I'm not going to say anything. I'll just walk right off this campus and consider myself lucky that, you know. But he came after us. You know, he came after us, and Mataji started speaking to him a little bit, and then we all started talking to him. And, he wasn't bothered at all. Anyway, he was real interested, you know, and he was real nice. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, if you like, you know, you can come back to the temple with us. I'm doing a program at my home tonight. One of the spiritual leaders of our movement is speaking. You're welcome to come. So he said, he thought about it for a second, and he had his backpack. Okay. I was really surprised. So he hopped in the car, and he came back with us. And he went to the... we took him to the restaurant, he had prasadam, and then he came over for the program, and Jai Pataka Maharaj was speaking. And the thing was that Jai Pataka Maharaj was really tired. You know, that day he did extra laps around the pool in his therapy, and he didn't have a chance to take his nap or anything like that, so he was really tired. And it was very hard to understand what he was saying. You know, I couldn't. Like last night, I came for his lecture, I understood 100%. But that night, I practically couldn't work out anything. You know, he was actually real tired. He was kind of almost sometimes at some points falling asleep as he was speaking. So it was real hard, you know. And I was thinking, you know, wow, what's, you know. And then, so he was there for that. And then the next morning he came to Savasa's class on Lord Nityananda, which was wonderful. But, you know, like at times it was very in-house, and at times it was, you know, he was describing philosophy, which would be way over his head. He wouldn't have a clue what he was talking about, but he was there for that. So anyway, the next morning we drove him back, and when I was driving him back, I said, so what'd you think? You know, what was your impressions? And what do you think about that program at my home that night? I said, were you able to understand what he was saying? He says, well, not really. He said, but I learned a lot of nonverbal lessons. Yeah. I said, this is a nice fellow, by the way. I mean, I hope he becomes a devotee. But even if he doesn't, I have to say, this is one heck of a nice guy this fellow was. You know, I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you know, he says, I was noticing the way that, you know, everybody was respecting the guru. You know, he said, even though he was, he was elderly and he was disabled, everybody was showing him so much respect and paying so much attention. And he said, I really appreciated that, you know. And I said, oh, well, why is that special to you? He says, well, you know, in this culture, this is about without me saying, in this culture, people in that condition are neglected. They're neglected. You know, people who are elderly and disabled, they don't tend to, you know, people just couldn't care less about them like that. So he appreciated that. And he picked up also on the way the men and the women were interacting with each other. You know, he picked up something was going on there, and he also was able to appreciate, but he also appreciated the way it was the women who were looking after Jai Pataka Maharaj in particular, you know, at the program. And So, you know, he said nonverbal lessons. So the point is that he noticed how much respect that the devotees were had in their, the way they were interacting with each other, and he really appreciated that. He didn't understand a word of what, like myself, that evening. He couldn't understand practically a word of what Jai Pataka Maharaj was saying, you know, but he appreciated that, you see. So it's just, I mentioned as an example for like what's meant by cooperating. You know, that's an, Prabhupada said, please cooperate to spread this movement. So I think that's a real important thing there is respect. I can't remember who was giving class, but they asked a question the other morning. Anyway, I was thinking, I can't remember the question, but respect, that's a very important part of, you know, how cooperating. That we rather, that we try to appreciate how this person is trying to sincerely engage in devotional service. And we focus on that, you know, and we try to not focus on, you know, the external things like, oh, this guy, I wish this person could learn how to sing. Well, when is that person going to get it together to do this? Can he or she do, you know, no. You got to just focus on, you know, that more. Just try to, not so much focus on that, but focus on, cultivate that appreciation that, well, you know, I could see this person is really making a genuine, sincere attempt to try to follow Prabhupada, so I should appreciate that. And try to be very respectful in our dealings with each other. And, you know, just like we try harder and harder to hear our japa, we try harder and harder to you know, on Sankirtan to distribute a lot of books, I think we should always be trying harder and harder. It's something we should be practicing to get better and better at, you know, being more and more respectful to each other, to other devotees. And everybody remembers that there's that story that's told, like, I'll just mention it, I won't retell it. About that, somebody did in a class. There was this, a bunch of, it was a monastery. And at this monastery, I think maybe Sachinoy mentioned in the class he gave, at this monastery they weren't doing too well. They people weren't getting interested to join, and some of the ones who were joining were leaving. So the heads of the monastery, the two, the priests, they thought, well, you know, they couldn't solve the problem. They couldn't figure out what was going on. So they went to this rabbi who was, lived locally. He was supposed to have a reputation for being very wise, and they described the problem to him, and he said, and they asked him what to do. And he said, well, I don't really have a direct answer for your question, but when you go back there, he said, what can we, you know, is there anything you could tell us, anything? He said, just tell the people who are, you know, there, tell them that the Messiah is among them. You know, so they went back, and they told all the people, you know, in the monastery there, the Messiah is among them. So, you know, the obvious thing. They all started treating each other with a lot of respect, thinking that, oh, well, maybe he's the Messiah. Maybe he's the Messiah. You know, none of them were the Messiah, but because they were all so concerned. Nobody wanted to offend the Messiah, you know. So they started treating each other with tremendous respect, thinking that, well, maybe this one's the Messiah. Man. And what happened was it created such a wonderful mood among all the people there that when people visited, when guests came and people visited, they were so impressed by how respectfully and how, you know, lovingly and et cetera, these people were interacting with each other, they became attracted and they started joining. And the word got around and, you know, the whole thing started flourishing like that. So in that way, things could happen here. You know, we want to make a lot of devotees, so I think that's an important aspect to it, that when people come, they should see that we should treat them very nicely, of course, and they should see that we're treating each other very nicely, you know, that we actually have a lot of affection for each other, a lot of respect, a lot of consideration, and like that, and they'll be attracted. They'll think, this is the place where I want to be. This is the kind of people I want to associate with, and this is the kind of place where I want to be. And that'll help them, you know, want to make a commitment to become a devotee of Krishna. So I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Oh, okay. They're going to bring you a microphone because this is being broadcasted on the internet, so hang on 1 second. And you could just repeat that same thing into that microphone so everybody could hear.
My question was that you had mentioned earlier that Our service ends when we die, and if we are blessed enough to think of Krishna in our last moment, we go back to Godhead, and our work is done. But I'm doing all of this work because I want to be God's servant in the afterlife, in the spiritual realm. So when you say that my work is done, it defeats me.
Okay. And so, yeah, thank you. It needs a little clarification. Your service in this body, it's not completed until that your dying breath or your dying thought like that. Then that's the end of this body. But then your service continues. Devotional service is eternal, and especially if you're fortunate enough to think of Krishna right at the moment of death, your Prabhupada said it's like going to sleep and waking up and being back in the spiritual world. So your service will continue. It doesn't end, but your service in this body will end at that moment. And we should be, while we're conscious of this, of this particular identity, we should be thinking, well, I have to be enthusiastic and determined to be Krishna conscious up until that last breath, up until that last moment. And then, it just depends on what happens after that. It's up to Krishna. Anybody else have any questions or comments about anything? Okay. Another guest here would like to ask a question.
Yes, it's concerning the mind. I consider the mind to be the source of ideas. Do you think that is the case?
Is the mind the source of ideas?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, ideas are coming from the mind, but we have to evaluate them with our intelligence. You see? Just because you might have an idea, let me go out and do this and that. Okay? The idea pops in your head. That's the way it works. But then you have to use your intelligence and you have to evaluate, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? You think, like, the mind is always having, ideas are always coming into the mind. But the intelligence is what we use to discriminate what is beneficial and what is detrimental. What is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad, like that, see? So yeah, you're right. The mind is a reservoir of ideas. I think there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It goes, Apoyamanama chalapratishtam samudrama papashanti yadva tadva. I can't remember the Sanskrit. Anyway, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires, which enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled, yet remains still. He alone can achieve real peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy these ideas or these desires. And Prabhupada points out in his purport, he says, this is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, is that he's lost all inclination for sense gratification, although the desires or the ideas are present. So he knows you have to be able to evaluate on the basis of what we've learned in these books from Srila Prabhupada, what's a good idea and what's a bad idea. If the idea pops in your head, let me go out and distribute some books today, or let me go out and distribute some prasadam today, then you go, that's a good idea. So you do that. And if it's like, let me go out and buy an adult movie, or let me go out and, whatever, then no, that's a bad idea. You don't see. So the ideas are going to, the mind is always generating ideas. But with your intelligence, you have to be able to, discriminate which is what's a good idea, what's something worth acting on, and what's something not worth acting on. Okay, so I guess we could stop there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.